welcome to EndNotes. My name is Sheila Broderick. In this programme, we invite people to share their funeral playlist and their thoughts about death, dying, ritual and the afterlife if they believe in one. My guest today is Reddy O'Regan, retired solicitor and job seeker. Born in Skibbereen in 1955 to parents Redmond and Peggy. He had a very happy childhood in Skibbereen, his mother's hometown, where people had adopted his father as their mentor, defender and friend. The older people still speak fondly of him to Reddy over 40 years after his death. From his parents and their much-loved housekeeper Annie Cotter, he learned the importance of people, a belief in social justice, and that the only real equality is equality of esteem. He attended St. Patrick's Boys National School in Skibbereen. Secondary school took him to Castleknock College in Dublin, where Father Garrod O'Sullivan from Skibbereen taught at the time. Reddy enjoyed his time there. His love of music and art took precedence over all other pursuits, but he scored well enough to gain entry to the law faculty in Cork. His father, to whom he was indentured as a solicitor's apprentice, died in 1975, and his mother moved to Dublin. In 1976, he met his friend of 40 years and wife, Linda Dillon from Cork. After he qualified as a solicitor in 1979, they moved to Mullingar, where he had a contract for 2 years, which turned into a partnership and a stay of 33 years in the Midlands. Linda's young brother, Paul, died in a tragic accident in 1980, and her father, Jim, died in 1984. This was a time of great sadness. Three children, born in 1981, 1982 and 1985, filled the family. In 1995, Peggy, his mother, died, and the next year they adopted their youngest child from Romania, who is now 22. In 2011, the decision to retire from legal practice was taken, and in 2012, Reddy, Linda and their youngest child moved home to Tregumna, outside Skibbereen. You're very welcome, Reddy.
Thank you.
Reddy, in your intro there, there have been a number of deaths in the family, but not so recent. Can you recall, were they sudden deaths?
My father took several years to die, and Mum's death, while anticipated, was quite sudden at the end. We did have another death more recently, which was my sister, who died very suddenly after a brief battle with cancer, and her husband died just 2 years later. Again, he had been in failing health, and while his death was anticipated, it also came as a surprise.
And so was it possible to talk to them about their death if they knew in advance that they were close to death?
In Dad's case, he was quite philosophical, but we were all careful not to tell him he was dying. Clearly he knew himself but didn't need to be told by other people. Mum was different in that she had gone to a happier place in her own head long before she died, and therefore there was no point in troubling her. For Rona, she was too ill, and for Finbar, his own children would have been looking after him close to death.
And so when people are well, do you, like, for example, would you talk in your own family about perhaps your own death? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Death is as much a reality as birth, and life is really just a little interruption between them.
That's a lovely way of putting it. Can you intro your first song for us, please?
Yeah, my first choice is a song, or a tune called Stranger on the Shore by Acker Bilk from 1961. It brings with it fond memories of my parents and Dad whistling while we worked in the garden. Now the garden is in the car park in Skibbereen, but marks we made can still be seen there. Thank you.
bringing the subject closer to home, Reddy, can you tell us what scares you most about dying?
I have no fear of death as such, but the process of dying is a cause for concern. Were it not for the skill of a wonderful midwife, Kit O'Brien, my life would have ended at birth. I do not remember the trauma of birth and have no wish to have a traumatic death. I wish for a quick and clean death, for my own sake, but more so for Linda's sake and those close to us.
And so do you engage with the idea of a living will?
Certainly. I think I haven't put one in place. I do believe they are very important for people, especially as they get older. Obviously, it would be prudent for young people to have them, but the proximity of death is not something that engages the young mind as much as the older mind. A living will would be very important if you had any doubt about the people around you concurring with your wishes.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, for example, you might express certain wishes within a living will, but they might fall outside the realm of legal jurisdiction. So, I mean, that complicates things somewhat.
There is no legal structure for a living will at present in Ireland, so it falls back into its proper home, which is the realm of the relationship between the individual and their doctor. And if the individual gives a clear instruction to the doctor, that should be the end of it.
And then what about euthanasia? I mean, that's something that falls outside both medical and legal.
Yeah, well, euthanasia pushes on towards the area of suicide and also crosses a bridge where the decision to euthanize somebody is generally taken by another person, not the person themselves. So it's the other side, if you like, of suicide, where, as a matter of policy or other reasons, it's decided to end somebody else's life, whereas the person themselves deciding to end their life would fall into the bracket of suicide or assisted suicide.
OK. So, for example, if someone has a degenerative disease and decides before they get too infirm that they do want to be euthanized, you would categorise that as assisted suicide?
I wouldn't, but the law does.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to clarify. All right. So maybe you could tell us what your next song is, Reddy.
Next up is Catch the Wind by Donovan. This is a song that goes back to when my sister Jerry had it on a single, and it became one of my anthems, often sung in the pubs and so on.
Frequently. Okay.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm heart of your love and mine, to feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. But I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes would find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. 'Twould make me sing. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind. All my blues behind. For standing in your heart is where I want to be and long to be. I bet I may as well try and catch the wind.
So we've discussed, you know, some of the things that scare you most about dying. Are there any things that are not so scary about dying that don't really bother you?
Well, my sense of curiosity makes death somehow appealing. But on the other hand, I can wait. The hollow talk surrounding the dead annoys me. I will be glad not to have to listen to what is said about me. One of the things that is appealing about death is not having to contend with gossip and backbiting that seems to be something of a national occupation in this country.
Although, was it as Oscar Wilde said, it was better to be talked about than not talked about?
That was Oscar Wilde. I don't necessarily agree. There's a lot to be said for being pleasantly invisible.
So does that mean you wouldn't be in favour of eulogies during funerals?
A eulogy composed with a sense of dignity is always nice. But a eulogy full of platitudes and material which would make the deceased cringe were they alive is not really the thing.
Yeah, remarkably, the widow of Anthony Foley gave a heartfelt eulogy. Just comes to mind.
As my dad used to say, people either have class or they don't. That lady has class.
Yeah. And maybe just on that, we'll go to our next song.
And the next song is Woodstock, written by Joni Mitchell. This is a cover version by Good Harvest. The 1969 was the year for Woodstock and a lot of other marvellous things. Joni Mitchell couldn't make it to the festival, but her song was taken for her by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. This more recent cover is as good as I've heard and is, I think, really beautiful.
Saw the bombers riding shotgun in the sky, and they
turning into butterflies above our nation. We are stardust, billion year old carbon. We are golden, caught in the devil's bargain.
Ready that you were curious about death, although you were in no hurry for it. Does that mean that you anticipate there's an afterlife?
What I anticipate is that we came from somewhere and we are here, and it is illogical to say that when we are finished in this room that there isn't another room to enter. Whether that be in human form, or as what we understand as human form, or otherwise, is immaterial. I look forward to the prospect of an afterlife, but if there is none, I can't really be disappointed, because I won't be there.
True. On the other hand, what is your experience of the death of people close to you? Did you feel their presence close to you as spirits in that sense, or or did you feel once they were dead, they were gone?
I have always felt arguably closer to people after their death than when they are alive. Obviously, I don't extend that to people who I meet on a day-to-day basis, but people who would be close to me, but at a physical distance. My father, for example, I would always have felt him very close to me when I was in court. And
after he died?
After he died, yes. He never saw me perform in court except since he died. And hopefully he approved of the way I did things.
So there's you have a strong belief in the persistence of some form of existence after death?
Absolutely. You know, the images we are given in the catechism and in religion classes, I don't find particularly credible or particularly attractive. However, as an example for young minds, they could do worse.
Okay, very good. So can you give us your next song, please?
Next song is Thank You by Led Zeppelin, again from 1969. Led Zeppelin were introduced to me by a good old friend, John Lindsay, and they have become part of my life ever since. I enjoy the fact that I have every single recording of theirs that was produced, and Thank You is one of the songs from Led Zeppelin 2, which I have always loved.
Mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me. Kind of woman, I give you my
drops of rain, whisper of the pain, tears of love lost in the days gone by. My love is strong, here there is no wrong, together we shall go until we die. Today my world, it smiles. Your hand in mine, we walk the miles. Thanks to you, it will be dark. For you to me are the only one. The sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. Mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me.
Thank You by Led Zeppelin. Your song choices are very interesting, Reddy. Do you imagine that they are going to be played in a church or a hotel, or what, where had you imagined that your funeral service might be held?
When I get down to it, I have no particular preferences or plans for my funeral, because in reality, funerals are for the living, not for the dead. So I would like my funeral to be whatever gives the most comfort to Linda and our children and anybody else who are adversely affected by my demise. So as to where the songs might be sung or played, I have no objection to being taken through a church or not. I have no objection to being buried or cremated. It doesn't matter. But what I would hope for is that people would celebrate a little, if not my passing, at least my life.
And your funeral list is very much part of that, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Each song has a meaning for me. They play a part in my life. As a young person, I always was fearful of being a conservative, but on getting a little older, I find that I became conservative, and I still love the things I loved a long time ago, particularly my wife.
Great. So let's have your next choice of music.
And next we have Boots of Spanish Leather by Bob Dylan, but this is Joan Baez's version of it, recorded in 1967. Joan and Bob obviously were very, very close friends a long time ago. This is a great timeless song of unrequited love. It's good fun.
Send back to me. Spanish boots of Spanish leather.
Bob will be remembered not only for his massive recording career, but also for the awards that he's been given over the years, most recently the Nobel Prize for Literature. What would you like to be remembered for?
I think Bob Dylan may be somewhat embarrassed by his recent award, and I certainly would be embarrassed if people overpraised me. But I would hope that I would be remembered for some little kindness. I hope my wife, children and grandchildren think kindly of me. Otherwise, I'm a single human, a breath of air, a moment of time, and individually insignificant.
So does that mean that you think your life has been one of insignificance?
No, not at all. But rather that any one life is insignificant against the great scheme of things. What we can hope to do is have a good effect on other people's lives. But that effect may be so minute as not to be recordable. But nevertheless, it is important.
It's interesting that because, you know, with the rise of social media, people have never recorded more of their lives in these decades than any archives in the past. So there are more and more ways to remember people, but, you know, whether they're significant in the wider sense is really something that's an interesting question.
It's a very interesting question, and I suspect that history will lament social media for gathering so much rubbish. If we look at the great art collections, say in Venice or in Florence, we see a tiny, tiny selection of the work that was done in art in each particular year. Much of the work that we see is lauded not for its quality but for its antiquity. We read philosophy, we wonder at what the philosophers talk about, and we try to make sense of what they're saying. However, are we reading the graffiti, or are we reading the serious content from that time? It's hard to know. And if we move into social media, nobody really is concerned about the quality of the pizza in any particular location. However, social media can also be used positively by restraining oneself and treating not social media seriously, but what we say seriously.
Okay, so if you don't want to be remembered for any particular significant contribution, is there anything that you wouldn't like to be remembered for?
I can think of some things that I won't mention, but what inevitably we cause offence, either carelessly or accidentally. I try to resolve these regrettable situations when I become aware of them. I would not like to be remembered as uncaring. I am not easily offended and find it difficult to be angry when wronged. I would not like to be thought of as a victim.
Interesting. And why do you say a victim?
Victim implies that you are put in a position which you have no input in. And in every situation that I've been put in or have arrived in, I have taken my own decision as to how to respond to it. It may be that I have a choice between two options or a choice of many, but it's my choice. So that if I appear to have lost in any given situation, it's because I have decided that enough energy has been expended. For example, I see absolutely no point in hating somebody because that affords them far more recognition than they perhaps deserve. It takes energy to hate. So why waste that energy?
Okay, and let's have your next song choice.
And next we have You've Gotta Hide Your Love Away, written by Lennon McCartney, I believe. Certainly released by the Beatles, but more recently recorded in 2002 by Eddie Vedder. And his version, I believe, is the best I've heard. And the song is heavily underrated, I believe. It's a really, really good song.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can go on, feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. How can I? How could she say to me, love will find a way? Gather around all you clowns, let me hear you say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
Reddy, how well prepared are you for death? And do you know what's going to happen to all your stuff when you die?
Well, being prepared for death obviously implies a question, have I got a will? And the simple answer is yes, I have. And I believe everybody should have, for a very particular reason. If we have a particular intent in arranging how our goods and chattels are passed on, and in particular, if we want to say that an individual is not to benefit on our death, we should take responsibility for that ourselves and not leave it to somebody else. So we should have, in our will, very clearly say why a given person who might have expected an inheritance is not getting it. Then they can't fall out properly with the widow or the children or the executor. They can focus their annoyance directly on the testator. The other reason, of course, is that it's very important to have an executor there who can step into the shoes of managing things while the family recover from the immediate effects of the death. As to where my bits and pieces would go, I don't have anything of any commercial value. I hope that people would like some of what I have. I can think of things that individual children might like, but maybe I've got too much of it. Maybe it's
your
out of
record
date.
Collection must be very coveted.
It's large. As to whether it's coveted is another day's work. In this day and age of streaming of music, where people don't like to be burdened with vast quantities of plastic, I have a lot of artwork that I've done myself, a lot of photography. It would be nice to think that somebody would think well enough of it to want to show it. But if they don't, that's okay. I don't mind. I take the pleasure in making things. It's just, if you like, salt and pepper on it, if somebody else appreciates it too.
You mentioned there people perhaps being disappointed by the outcome of a will. And it's kind of, you know, I suppose, grief and loss mixed up with disappointment. But why do you think people don't discuss the contents of their will prior to their death, so that at least when the outcome of the will is known, people don't have that sense of disappointment?
I think one of the reasons that wills aren't discussed is at the first stage, say people up to 35 years of age probably don't take their wills all that seriously. Then from 35 on to maybe 60, they are too busy, if you like, to talk about things and maybe regard their children as too young. And then when they get past 60 or a little over, they start getting worried because one child may be a little more demanding than another. One may demonstrate greed while another one demonstrates kindness. They may placate the greedy one by implying that they will benefit, fully intending to make sure that it's the kind person who is repaid. So there are good logical reasons for being reticent about it. However, practicality would say yes, it should really be quite public.
And in any case, I mean, doesn't the law say that, that there is a legal entitlement to a certain proportion of an estate, if depending on your relation to the person who has died?
The law says that, but in respect of children and more remote, it is a rebuttable position. It is perfectly reasonable for a person making a will to say that the inheritance or the putative inheritance of one person has been given to them in the lifetime. And so they have already received whatever their entitlement might be. Or it's equally acceptable to put into the will that there is a specific well thought out reason for not giving the person a gift. For example, if they were a spendthrift, the gift might be put in trust, so that the trustees can decide if and when the benefit is spent. And of course, that spendthrift will probably be quite annoyed to have to go cap in hand to a relative stranger to get what they consider to be their entitlement.
Indeed. And I suppose there's a lot to be said for having no expectation of anything and just get on with your life.
I have never seen a fight at the funeral of a poor man.
Okay, enough said. Let's have your next song, please.
And the next song is another old song, but a new version of it. It's Sound of Silence by Paul Simon, but on this occasion it's a cover version by a band called Disturbed. A beautiful song, and this new version I think is far better than the original.
And can you tell me a little bit about Disturbed?
Disturbed are, I believe, a German band. They would generally fall into the bracket of heavy metal, but this is quite a laid-back and balladic rendition of the song.
Split the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs and voices never shared. But no one dared disturb the sound of silence.
That was The Sound of Silence by Paul Simon and performed by Disturbed. Is there silence in your family group and friends around death, or have you the opportunity to really talk about death and dying with your friends and family?
Well, Linda and I would always have a healthy disregard for death, as it's something which is inevitable. It's coming down the track. The question is not if, it's when. And so, for example, the first property we bought in West Cork was a plot in the graveyard. It would appear that that was a rather good investment because it cost very little at the time, and now I gather it would cost substantially more.
Just out of interest, how much would a plot cost now, do you think?
I think I heard it reported, not necessarily about Skibbereen, but something in the order of €5,000 outside Dublin, and in Dublin possibly up to 30,000.
Oh, but that wouldn't apply in regional towns?
Regional towns presumably would be several hundred.
Okay, yeah, just good to have some kind of idea.
To give context to how we would talk or act about death, I recall bringing our son Stuart to see our plot so he'd know where it was, and we decided we'd lie down on the plot to let him see which side we wished to be buried on, and he took a photograph, so it's there to be referred to if needs be.
That's great. Would you rather be awake and aware, or sedated and oblivious when you die?
No, that's a good question. Rather than either of these, I would hope it would be quick and clean, so it causes the minimum distress to others. That said, preferring pain is more perverse than I am. There is a point where a good doctor or nurse knows the point of no return has been reached. If I am undead, I see little point in being a nuisance.
So if you are aware, what would your last words be?
Oh, I suppose it could be, as the Gruffalo said, are we there yet? Or perhaps, as I saw in a headstone of a deceased priest, which I thought was a wonderful act of faith, see you later.
So we'll go to your next song.
And this is As I Roved Out, a traditional on this occasion performed by Plagsty from a recording in 1972. Linda and I have loved this song for many, many years and sing it when called upon in our local pub, the Skibbereen Eagle. It means more to me than the song itself.
ready. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're more than welcome.
You have been listening to Endnotes with me, Sheila Broderick. Today we were talking with Reddy O'Regan, retired solicitor and job seeker. We are currently recording interviews for this series. If you have views you would like to share about death, dying, funerals, the afterlife, and would like to share your own funeral playlist, please get in touch. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Clonline Radio and the web at clonlineradio.com, where you can also find podcasts of previous shows. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.